from Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Friday morning to you. So good to be with you. Got a big show planned for you today. Coming up, we'll start out at the bottom of the hour. Association of County Commissioners of Alabama, Sonny Brasfield. Longtime guy in Montgomery, kind of knows the ins and outs. They just had their county commissioner confab this week. They did it virtually. They couldn't go to, I guess, where they usually do it there, at the Renaissance Hotel in downtown Montgomery. But, kind of curious to hear what Sonny Brasfield has to say about that. What are the county commissioners talking about? What are their struggles with COVID-19? And probably, do they think there's a warranted, there's a need for a special session? So we're going to get into that with him, a lot of the ins and outs of state politics and what people or the local governments are dealing with right now. Also, columnist Steve Flowers writes a lot about Alabama politics. In the 11 o'clock hour, Congressman Scott Desjarlais represents Tennessee, joining us. He's a physician, and we're going to talk to him about the Postal Service. We'll also get into Pelosi in the election. What did he think of the Democratic National Convention? More on that in just a moment. And as we do every Friday, we'll hear from our good friend, State Senator Chris Elliott. He will be with us, get some more on that special session discussion as the show unfolds. 251-343-0106. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. If you were watching last night, the Biden speech. Mostly what we're hearing today is there's a lot of platitudes and a lot of praise for Biden from the left of center media. But you got to really here's what you got to do. If you take time to do these things like I do, because I'm have an unfortunate circumstances here where I do this for a living. But the second time you watch the Biden speech, you realize it's pretty awful. Granted, he had a very low bar, and I think there was just sort of this exhilaration from Biden making it through his acceptance speech last night that has led the media to praise it. It has led the media to talk about how great it was. It was soaring. It wasn't any of that. If you watch it a second time, the second time you watch it, you realize it was pretty terrible. First of all, that script was awful. It was cheesy. We're talking about darkness and light, and it read like, I don't know, like a fifth grade teen lit book or something. And you know, it was trying way too hard. It was very trite. It seemed contrived. Hokey is the word, maybe. It tried to humanize him, but I don't think we need to humanize Joe Biden at this point. I mean, we see his flaws. We see him for what he is. We know the backstory. It wasn't what Democrats needed. Because out of these conventions, you get a bump, right? And you know, these speeches are big. We think back to Barack Obama and the columns and all the majesty, you know, the majesty and all of that. And you know, the big moment there. You're supposed to get the goosebumps, but none of that. This was just kind of, it was overproduced. It felt like we're just checking a box. We say that a lot about the Democrats right now. They're just checking a box. We got to get through the convention. It's a formality. They're not using it as a tool in a way that they could to advance their candidates, to advance their causes. It seemed as if they just wanted to make sure, especially if you look at all of the things that go on during the day that we don't see, that people aren't watching, the stuff that's only online or only on C-SPAN. They wanted to make sure they included everybody, and everybody got their say, and they got to talk about their issues. Things like Green New Deal or whatever it might be. You name your left-of-center or lefty cause of the day, and they check the box, right? He had to talk about LGBTQ. Got to talk about George Floyd. Guns. We got to talk about all of these elements of the Democratic Party. And that's what it is. It's a bunch of different groups coalescing around one cause, and that cause seems to be, and not to get Democrats elected to defeat Donald Trump. That's the glue that keeps it all together. And then I think if Biden wins, these groups aren't going to stick around. They're going to start turning on each other because they all think they have the most important cause of the day. And you can't be all things to everybody. And you've got to have that civil war in the Democratic Party. But Biden last night, he didn't really seem to unify or do any of that. It gets back to the central theme of the entire Democratic National Convention, which is just we're looking at a situation where we got to get Donald Trump out of office. It's all about getting Donald Trump. It's a referendum on Donald Trump. Trump, right? And they're not giving people a reason to vote for something. And I know the adage in politics that more people will vote against something than they will for something. But you got to build that coalition. You got to have people voting for something and against something together to win a presidential election. Because maybe in New York State, in California, in the Pacific Northwest, in these populated areas, Democratic seats, they are voting against Donald Trump. No question. But you've got those places anyway. Even if you don't have Donald Trump on the ballot, you're going to get Democrats voting for. You're going to get Democrats voting for Democrats. There are some places in this country left, believe it or not, where people want to go vote for something. They want to get out to vote for something. They wanted to get out and vote for Joe Biden. They want to get out. Well, not Joe Biden just yet. They want to get out and vote for Barack Obama. They wanted to get out and vote for Donald Trump. And you need that element of an electorate to win a national presidential election. On the other hand, though, there are a lot of people in the Republican side that are voting just for Donald Trump. Are they voting against Joe Biden? Remember, that was a big part of Trump's win in 2016. You had a lot of people out voting against Hillary Clinton. We can't have Hillary Clinton as president. I may not like Trump, but I sure as heck don't want Hillary Clinton in the Oval Office. Does this election, are there enough people out there worried about the possibility of Joe Biden being president of the United States? And it all makes sense if you look at it now. Why are Republicans talking about how Democrats are going so socialist? It seemed kind of like a little too clever by half. Joe Biden was just Bernie Sanders with hair plugs or something like that. But you look at it, the Republican Party's trying to create something to give people a reason to go out and vote against something, too. You want to vote for Trump. Trump's got his followers. There's no question about it. He's going to do well. He has the enthusiasm. It's really stuck with him more than any other president. Maybe Obama's there as well. But he's been able to maintain that support, that, I don't know, dare I say, cult-like support throughout his presidency. And it's helped that you have these Democrats doing insane things like trying to create impeachment articles out of some Ukraine incident. That would be just normal politics in any other presidential administration. Or the Mueller thing. And it makes people mad because they look and say, hey, I voted for this guy. This is the guy I voted for. And you're trying to take away my vote? By toying around with this impeachment notion? And that solidifies Trump's base all throughout his presidency. I think it's really cemented that base, and it's there. On the other hand, What do you need? You need that little extra something, right? You need people that I don't want Joe Biden to be president of the United States. And what I think the Republicans are trying to do, they're trying to create this notion that if you elect Joe Biden, you're going to get socialism. You're going to get Medicare for all. You're going to have open borders. You're going to have all these things that the AOCs talk about or Bernie Sanders talks about. And that's to create that notion. Now, let's be realistic here. If Democrats get control of the House, the Senate, and the White House, even in our system, can they achieve all this in the first 100 days or whatever. Probably not. Although I would point to Obama, 2009 through 2010. What did he get done? You got Dodd-Frank. You got a big stimulus bill. Obviously, we can't forget about the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare. They got a lot of stuff done. Now, when Republicans had it, not as much. Remember, Republicans coming out of the 16 election had the House and Senate in the White House, and all they got, all Republicans got was a tax cut. She still had a few Republicans that were real skeptical of Donald Trump. And what the Democrats did was so smart. They got that Mueller saga kind of out there. And it made for tough times winning votes in the Senate and the House to get big things done. It had Paul Ryan as Speaker of the House. Mitch McConnell wanted to show that he had more clout. You could go back and look at numerous instances of Mitch McConnell just standing in the way of the Trump administration, not allowing him to get some of his appointments through the Senate. So it's all part of it. Democrats, if they get all control of all branches of government, are they going to be... I think that they'll definitely be more aggressive than Republicans were in 2017. But how much of that are they going to be able to get through without going and turning on each other? That's my question for you. But it's not a foregone conclusion that Joe Biden wins the presidency. It's just that's my hypothetical. I'm just throwing that out there for you. If Trump wins, you're probably still going to have some kind of level of mixed government. Although I could be totally wrong. There's a lot of people out there that think if you get Trump on the ballot, he's going to have coattails. This election really depends on what happens with the presidential election. And any number of things could happen in an October surprise. Typically, those October surprises happen to Republicans, but what if they happen to a Democrat? And Joe Biden's not out of the woods. You got three debates, and he's going to have to come out of the bunker in Wilmington, Delaware, which has a lot of Democrats antsy. Van Jones last night on CNN, right after Biden's speech wrapped up, he said that sound you heard was Democrats breathing a sigh of relief. They were worried about being embarrassed. Well, that is a big speech with lots of people watching. But you got to live to play another day. You got through round one of the playoffs here. We're heading on to the quarterfinals and the semifinals and then the championship. And you can't stumble along the way. And each of those opponents, it's not the head-to-head. Obviously, the championship's the election day. But all of those steps in between, all those intermediate steps, You got to survive them. And I think a lot of Democrats aren't convinced that Biden's that guy, that he can weather the storm. A presidential election, no small thing. It's the end-all, be-all to in American politics, right? He does have the advantage of the mainstream media. But that's not going to stop. Right now, there's still talk radio and the internet and Fox News. So he can't hide from this stuff. It's not going to be that simple. Now, CNN's not going to do a big special on, well, on second glance, Joe Biden's speech wasn't that great. But other people are. I gets back to the speech last night, very low bar. I think he got through it. But if you catch some highlights of it and you see he flubs a little bit along the way, it was just very hokey, a little too easy, a little too cookie cutter. Cookie cutter is probably the right way to describe it. All right, guys, we're going to take a break. We will return. This is the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5.
It's where I found Jesus, where I wrecked my first car. I tore it all to
And welcome back to the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Friday morning to you. Coming up in the next segment from the Association of County Commissions of Alabama, Sonny Brassfield joins us. Make sure that you stay tuned for that. Unemployment numbers for the state of Alabama up a little bit. Up from June for July, 7.6% in June, up to 7.9% in July. As you might expect, Baldwin County still in the very low category, 7.4%, 12.2% Mobile. There's some of this is probably just very marginal, and the way the numbers are catching up, I think you really want to wait for the August numbers, get a good sense of things. But remember, initially, when all these claims were out and people couldn't get the Department of Labor to work right, the system was overwhelmed. Then you had this, setting, this scene of people camped out to go see, just talk to somebody in person at the Department of Labor about unemployment benefits. Watch these numbers, though, as the state's talking about trying to figure out a way to do the executive order. Trump's got this executive order, and the state's got to match it to a certain degree, but they don't know if they can find that money to do so. Watch these numbers. I don't have a lot to do with it, but I still think the economy's headed in a better direction, particularly as we get on in later into the fall and into the season, the shopping season. Watch that. I think that's a big deal. Also, speaking of COVID-19, it looks like the trend for the virus with the testing is continuing down. And what I think is really important is among the college population, the infection rate continues to be very low. And that's important. Why? Because, well, everybody's worried about football season and what might happen with football season, right? But more importantly, every time you have a little bit of a breakout somewhere where seven or eight students in a dorm room get infected, the media are going to hype it up. But the numbers don't lie. The infection rate in colleges is remarkably low compared to the population. And we said this all along. We will start getting back to normal. You got to get kids in school. That's the big part of it. It's not this virtual learning stuff. It's where you actually go wait out by the school bus stop and go on to school, and then things start to seem normal. You know, maybe later on we'll start talking about masks and that or whatever. But overall, it's a it's good for the state of Alabama. Some places around the country, not quite as good. I think University of North Carolina changed course last week, decided, well, we're going to go to online classes only. Same with Notre Dame up in Indiana. But no matter what, that's big. And I think just from a purely morale standpoint, we start seeing football games coming up next month, and that will make people feel like things are a little back on a normal trajectory. Let's say that, because we know at what point do we just say none of this is working and just shrug and then just go back to our normal lives? I don't think do we ever get to that point. Well, would the powers that be, would the governor, the state health officer, allow for that? But we seem to be in a place right now where we're obviously not going to call a special session. I don't think we are by the end of the year for some kind of liability immunity protection. It's kind of you're playing a rock and a hard place. The numbers for coronavirus are going to have to go down before Governor Ivey will feel okay with calling a special session. And I don't think it's so much as Governor Ivey or anybody in the governor's office as is Speaker of the House, Mac McCutcheon. He seems to be the guy that's not really excited about the possibility of a special session. If you get to that special session, then you can pass what the businesses really need to feel comfortable with you know, getting things back to a semi-normal state, right? And that's that immunity protection. And then once we get to that point, then this becomes maybe a distant memory. I don't know. With the presidential election, who knows? Everything is so political right now, and government policy hinges on a lot of that. and if numbers could take a spike out of nowhere and we could be back to, you know, shelter in place. But it doesn't, that doesn't look like that's a possibility right now. And I'm not here to tell you it's herd immunity or any of that stuff. And I'd be real skeptical of the vaccines. Initially, you want to kind of see how those work out. You don't want to be the first one in line for the vaccine. I wouldn't want to be. Maybe you would be, but I want to kind of see how it plays out with people. But we'll see how that goes on in the future as it plays out. You'll want to keep track of that. The vaccine, Donald Trump really hyping that up, and that's another concern of mine, whether or not he can actually, you don't want to overpromise and underdeliver, especially in a political season. You don't want to give your political opponents free shot on goal, right? So all of this remains to be seen, but the numbers are heading in a good direction, and I'm starting to feel a bit better about things as it unfolds. I gave you my heart. All right, guys, we got to take a quick time out. We'll be right back. This is Jeff Porsche on FM Talk 106.5. You gave me nothing in return. You know it ain't so hard to say. Would you please just go away? To the Jeff Porsche Show at FM Talk 106.5. Still to come on the program today, Congressman Steve Flowers joins us in the next hour. We also have Congressman Scott Desjarlais of Tennessee joining us, and State Senator Chris Elliott. That's in the 11 o'clock hour. Make sure you stay tuned for that. Joining us now, friend of mine, always good to get him on when possible, from the Association of County Commissions of Alabama, Sonny Brassfield joins us. Sonny, how are you this morning?
Jeff, I am fabulous, man. I appreciate you giving me the chance to visit with you a little bit and the folks down in South Alabama. I wish I was on my way driving home from down there right now.
Hey, well, that's right. You had your big conference. It was supposed to be in Orange Beach, but unfortunately, with COVID and the limitations, you did it virtually this year.
We did, and everybody listening and everyone in our country, our usual schedule has been turned upside down in the last 6 to 7 months, and we had to forego what is really for us the end of our year and kicking off a new year to begin our efforts to try to be ready to provide assistance to counties, train their employees, and help impact good public policy in Alabama. We had to shift to a virtual platform, and you do the best you can with that. I think we had a good week, but nothing like what we need to have, really.
So tell me, all 67 counties, I assume you heard from each of them in different ways. What are you hearing back from? What was kind of, I guess, obviously COVID, but what are we dealing with here, you think?
Certainly. Well, we tried to use our time to emphasize us continuing to stay connected to each other, to rely on each other, to learn from each other. I will tell you, what has gone on at the county commission level in the last 8 months has been, among, if not the biggest challenge in the 31 years that I've been involved in county government in Alabama. In most communities, county government's one of the largest employers, and so we've dealt with all the same employee problems that all of the businesses have faced. But yet we're also in the business of providing public service. A good portion of county government had to continue in the face of the pandemic. So, we've worked really hard in the last 8 months to help give the counties the tools they need, but to also help them engage with each other. So, our real focus was continuing that. The outcome of what's gone on in the last few months certainly has impacted our county jails. It's impacted our ability to carry out Rebuild Alabama because the revenue is down slightly, and a number of other kind of unexpected employee issues. We're holding our breath about schools and whether or not schools will be able to continue under any kind of normal schedule, because so many of our employees have school-aged children, and counties are trying to put together plans for that, and we're trying to help them.
Yeah, so I guess the jail question, has that really resolved itself, where they had the hold? Last time we were talking about, there was a hold keeping inmates that were being housed in county jails from going on to state facilities because they didn't want to limit the spread of COVID-19. Is that issue still one to deal with?
It is, and I guess the easy answer for me to say to you would be, the Department of Corrections needs to remove its prisoners from county jails. You know, and certainly if COVID-19 were not embracing all of us and impacting everything we do, then that would be the message I would give to you this morning. We are doing our very, very best to be respectful of the challenge that the Department of Corrections faces, while at the same time recognizing that the Mobile County Jail is facing the exact same issues, made worse in some percentage because the department has essentially cut its intake of inmates, about 75%. In a typical month, if we go back to last year this time, the department would have been taking in, between 900 and 1,000 inmates a month from the county jails. Right now, they're taking in about 240 inmates per month. So, we've got about 3,000 inmates in the county jails that should be in state custody, and that represents about 15% or so of the state's total inmate population. So, we're continuing to search for a solution. We want to continue to be a partner, but in the end, we think the department needs to find some way to increase the intake of inmates as we move forward through this process.
So do you think there needs to be a special session to deal with some of these problems? Now, it looks like a lot of them can be dealt with at the executive level, but some of the members of the legislature think, now, we need to do it statutorily, we need to make sure it's codified. Do you even have a position on that?
Well, the issue we were just talking about with regard to, the inmates in county jails because of COVID, I'm not sure that that's something that the legislature wants to or needs to be getting on its work agenda. That's something that the department and the counties and the administration need to work together and find a solution on. There are issues out there that I think everybody agrees need to be addressed. The question is just a question of timing. For us, that's a little bit above my pay grade, and I'll let the people who make those decisions make those, and we'll react the best way we can. Certainly, the liability legislation is a piece that we would like to try to see passed, as soon as possible. Whatever the most realistic attitude and ability is for that, I will say that I watched the Mississippi special session, and they had a pretty large outbreak of COVID-19 positives right after their session, and I know that the folks here in Montgomery are looking at that and trying to find a way to manage it, whether it's in a special session or next February. I don't think anybody believes we're going to be out of the woods by then, and so I know everyone in Montgomery is working on protocols for that as well.
Does how are the I guess all these county courthouses having to deal with the protocols and the social distancing and mask, obviously, getting county business done in this era, has that come up, or are you offering any guidance or any help on that for your county governments?
Sure, and that has been a huge challenge, Jeff. Just to kind of be honest with you about it. Counties attempting to A, give the public access to the buildings, while B, trying to protect their employees. Most counties kind of retooled the office space and the counters and those kinds of things to provide some distancing and guards and those kinds of things. Most counties are still, especially the smaller counties, a little more actively screening people at the door with temperatures and questionnaires, and then regulating the number of people that are in the courthouse, while at the same time we realize everybody's got to carry on their business as well. We're trying to get back to normal while not acting normally, because we've got to recognize that we've also got employees and they have families. We spoke with a county last night that had a positive tests yesterday afternoon. And so, you know, this morning they're closing a couple of offices, keeping those people at home for 14 days. That means somebody else has got to carry out those duties. That's expensive. I will tell you that county governments around the state have absorbed significant increase in cost because of what I've just said. Every time someone tests positive, then you have to send home all of the folks around them under the CDC guidance, but you've got to try to keep government open. If we didn't have the revenue from the simplified seller's use tax, which is the tax on internet sellers, if counties were not receiving their portion of that, I'd be on your show this morning telling you that everybody needs to be worried about whether or not we can keep the courthouse open. That revenue, which this fiscal year will be, you know, $45 million or so for counties, has really been the backstop in the last 8 months for us.
What about that? Obviously, revenues are down because everything was closed. That had to be, another problem for counties to grapple with. You know, you're not getting maybe the sales tax or any of these other streams of revenue coming in because of shutdowns or just people not really out and about like they normally would be. You're hearing much of that.
Well, one of the interesting things, if you look at the Department of Revenue's abstract that would take us through collections in July, most of the taxes in Alabama are beginning to catch up. Now, there are some things that are still way behind: lodgings taxes, personal and corporate income taxes a little behind. Aviation fuel tax, of course, is way behind, but motor fuel and gasoline taxes are about 4% or so behind what was predicted. Sales taxes are almost level with last year, which is pretty amazing considering the fact that the state was essentially shut down for 7 weeks. I think that's a testimony to the leadership in the state and things that have been done to improve our economy. What we don't know at the county commission level is what this is going to do to ad valorem taxes, to property taxes. That is the largest source of operating revenue for county government. And, of course, property taxes were already paid before the pandemic hit. So we're looking really very cautiously as counties are working on their budgets, trying to estimate what we will see as we anticipate to be a downturn in ad valorem taxes in Alabama.
Joined by Association of County Commissions of Alabama head Sonny Brassfield here on the program. Let's kind of move on to something else. Big, very instrumental in pushing for that Rebuild Alabama Act passage last year. Gas taxes obviously have gone up. What are you hearing about progress being made on those roads, on getting some of those bridges fixed? Does that seem to be moving in a good direction?
It does. And one of the things that the public ought to know, again, I'll mention our website. It's alabamacounties.org, and there's a Rebuild Alabama link right there on the homepage. You can go and look at every plan that was adopted by every county in the state. Every county was required last August to adopt a plan for this fiscal year that we're in now. The counties are all working on their plans. They have to be adopted by the end of next week for how they will spend the money next year. All of that will also be immediately up on our website, and then in January, all the counties will report on exactly how they did spend the money. I think that transparency that the legislature put in that program is very important. I would say to you that in May, April and May, counties did put a few projects on hold as we tried to assess the impact of the state's shutdown on gasoline and diesel fuel purchases. But most of that has been recouped. I would say to you maybe 4-5% less construction than had been estimated, which again is an amazing testimony. And the timing was great on the increase in the fuel tax. I mean, in Alabama, gasoline still remains way less than $2 a gallon, less than it was when the tax was enacted by the legislature. So, that's been a very positive thing too.
One of the things, I guess, during this whole gas tax debate or whatever, one of the criticisms was even if you got the money you wouldn't have the personnel or the equipment or the materials, any of those, they would be a hurdle because you'd have all of a sudden have a big demand on these elements. But with that and COVID going on and this new influx of resources in for improving roads and bridges, has that been a problem just logistically getting more of those barrels up and more pavement put out on the roads?
Well, I'd like to take a minute and brag on our county engineers. Again, you can go to our website. We have a joint purchasing program that we do for the counties. We serve as the bidding agent, and the first thing the county engineers did after the act was passed, they said, we need to purchase our asphalt collectively together statewide so we get a better price. Counties kind of retooled. Many of them are doing the resurfacing themselves, purchasing the liquid asphalt off this statewide contract that's an amazingly low price. We're in the process right now of bidding concrete and aggregate for the counties to use next year. Working very, very hard to do what we said we were going to do, which is be responsible with the confidence that the voters gave to us when they were supportive of starting this program.
Real quick, Sonny, folks want to find out more about your organizations, where can they go?
Sure, they can go to our website. It's alabamacounties.org. They can follow me on Twitter. It's at Sonny Brassfield. And I appreciate the chance to talk with you, Jeff, again, man. You take care and have a great day down there.
You too. We'll do it again real soon. That was Association of County Commissions of Alabama Executive Director Sonny Brassfield. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 1065. Alabama. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 1065. Happy Friday morning to you. Still to come on the program. We got columnist Steve Flowers joining us in the next hour. Also, Congressman Scott DeJarlais and from Tennessee, and State Senator Chris Elliott from Baldwin County. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And for real this time, open up the phone lines 251-343-0106. If we could get through last time, that was an error on my part, but we'll be sure to get you on this go-around. Also, you can text that number, 251-343-0106, or you hit us up on Twitter, twitter.com/Jeff_Poore if you want me, or twitter.com/FM Talk 1065 if you want all other departments as well. So a bunch of ways for you to get in touch with us this morning. If you have anything on your mind, a lot of things missing from the Democratic National Convention. How much did we talk about police? Did that seem like that was missing? There wasn't a lot of talk about law enforcement. But I think, obviously, COVID-19 is dominating everything right now. If you go, once you get beyond that, what's next? What's the next biggest concern for people out there? And is it? Maybe it's China. We never talked about a lot about China. I mean, that's sort of tangentially related to COVID-19. They didn't talk about that at the DNC. Maybe there's something to that. And we all know, some of you may not be aware of this, Hunter Biden has some business ties, made a bunch of money off a Chinese state-owned business there, and that's raised some conflict of interest questions. It's not just Ukraine, it's China as well. So that's one big concern. But back to the police stuff, people are really worried about their safety and the public safety, and the possibility there is a movement afoot in this country, particularly in the big cities, to downscale police offices and departments, do away with precincts, and when your home is robbed, we're going to send a social worker there to deal with this. So that. That was missing from last night's Democratic National Convention. All right, we've got some calls here. We're going to get you on. Dave, let's talk about, of all things, China. Dave, what's on your mind?
Yeah, boy. I called a couple of weeks ago and talked to Sean concerning the computers that our governor had bought from China. She bought 4,000 laptops, I believe it was. And they were held up in customs because apparently they were human rights violation, the company that was making them over there. And
right.
My question to Sean at the time was, why, when we have over 150,000 Americans that died from the Chinese virus, would we buy anything from China? And then last night I see a news story where the Board of Education bought these thermal imaging cameras for the Baldwin County school system for $1 million from China. And they're told that they don't work right.
Surprise.
As many representatives and senators as you talk to, I would appreciate it if you just asked them why they haven't put up a bill yet that we don't buy from them.
All right, Dave, we got to let you go there. But, I'll talk about that on the other side. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. This is Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I've been Dixie with these Alabama blues.